Since its inception in 2022, CFRC Power Plays has become the number one destination for all things Queens football.
And that is a touchdown for the Gales!
With over 50 million lifetime views, CFRC Power Plays is the defining voice in Queens football coverage.
Looking for Nico Quaymo! Quaymo! My goodness! Nico Quaymo with a touchdown!
Follow us today on Instagram at CFRC Power Plays, your number one spot for rock solid football action.
Hi, I'm Tom Savage, professional musician and songwriter and host of Leave It All on the Stage. This CFRC radio show and podcast series explores the challenges of the working musician in the 21st century, while also identifying the many joys inherent in the artist's life. Episodes feature special guests discussing a range of topics, and whether you're new to the music scene, a veteran performer, or a music fan, there's something here for you. Music equals life. Thanks for joining us. Music has been around since the dawn of humanity, perhaps predating spoken language itself, and has been an important means of communication and conveying emotion throughout the history of our species. Before the relatively recent development of radio and recorded music, people had to play music themselves if they wanted to enjoy it. Thus, the ubiquitous nature of upright pianos in the early 20th century. Music is inextricably linked with the communities we create and maintain. So why is it that music is often treated like an afterthought or disposable in our society? Why is it so difficult for artists to earn a living wage? Music is something we cannot truly live a full life without. So why do we often behave like it doesn't matter? Joining me today to discuss music and its importance in fostering community are Moira DeMorest, music officer for the City of Kingston, co-founder of KPP Productions and Spring Reverb Fest, and musician herself, and Tom Stewart, who is on the board of directors with Joe's Mill, the Joe Chitlin Musical Instrument Lending Library, and is the co-founder of Kingston's homegrown live music festival, which raises funds for Joe's Mill. He is also a mandolin strumming, harmonica blowing Fred Eagle Smith singing man about town, and he joins me and a whole gang of my friends every Tuesday at the RCHA for the Tuesday afternoon jam. Welcome, guys.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Moira, you are the first person to be appointed music officer for the City of Kingston, so could you tell us how that came about and what your initiatives are you're working on, what the position holds?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's a huge honor to, one, chat with you about music and community, because this is awesome, and this is truly my jam. And also to sit as the music officer with the City of Kingston, and which is a strategic partnership between the City of Kingston and Tourism Kingston. And I mean, it's a huge honor to be in that role, and also to be first out of the gate. I mean, I think it really all came about as being somebody that was in the right place at the right time. You know, 2020, if we want to sort of, you know, dive into that. Really,
I've forgotten about that.
It was, you know, a terrible time, but it was also a time where people had some time to think about stuff and to start to plant some seeds. And that was really the time that, alongside some CFRC partnerships, my production company that I co-founded with my partner Mark, we launched Spring Reverb Festival. And the idea for that was we saw an opportunity, yes, to showcase some awesome Kingston local area talent. We have tons of it in Kingston, but also, you know, bridge the gap with some industry pieces. Like, Kingston is like on the 401 corridor, but yet the industry of like the Torontos and the Montreals and the bigger markets sometimes kind of pass us by or aren't always like looking at us, even though we have this like booming, churning out of like crazy talent.
Yeah, like Kingston definitely punches above its weight as far as the music scene. I always compared Kingston to like Winnipeg, it as a similar scene, but you know, a much smaller city. Do you find the industry is a little bit Toronto centric at times?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, it's hard for us. We're not trying to compete with that. Why would we? We're like not even that far away from it. But you know, yeah, it is. The especially in Canada, that industry is really it's dominated there. So any ways that we can kind of pull that or at least connect the dots so that our artists aren't like, yeah, cool, I can play in Kingston and I have like an awesome crowd, but like, how do I do this for a living? Or how do I get more opportunities? Or maybe I want to book a tour, you know, across Canada. Maybe that's really ambitious, but how do I, you know, sort of look at Kingston and or look at the music community that I'm building here and kind of grow with that. So that's really, really how things sort of came about. And I was in the role as music commissioner with Tourism Kingston as we were developing the music strategy, which, you know, then launched things and gave a work plan, an idea of what Kingston was, what we had to offer, where the gaps were, and some concrete actions to kind of launch things forward. So that was kind of the beginning,
yeah.
Let's say. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thanks. Tom Stewart, you've been involved with Joe's Mill and the Homegrown Live Fest since the beginning. Could you fill us in on what that's all about for people that don't know?
Yeah, just one little correction. I'm not on the board of directors of Joe's Mill. I've been a supporter from the outset, but I've never been on their executive. Homegrown was originally developed in direct response to the need to fund Joe's Mill. They don't get any, at the time, they weren't getting any external funding. Government funding, they're a charity, and there was a need to raise money. And they'd had a few initiatives that maybe didn't go so well. So the other thing we came up with was, well, we didn't want to take any risk. And, you know, we didn't want to put up money and then hope that we made a profit or anything like that. So we wanted to come up with a fundraising formula that supported the mill but was low risk. And if you remember, Matt Woodward started Live Music Lovers Weekend.
Yeah.
And that was our model. And it was Roger Eccleston and I who sat down with Matt. And we didn't have to, but we kind of asked his permission to take his concept. And but more importantly, just give us some advice on how to do that. And we checked in with a number of people, and it was quite interesting. Matt said one thing. He said, well, make sure you have a face associated with it, especially when you start. It's got to be somebody who people, you know, sort of a one window shopping, if you will. And that turned out to be me. But we also heard from some other people that, you know, the music scene couldn't support a live Music Lovers Weekend. It's just, it wasn't the same anymore. You know, those were different times. And I didn't believe that, right? And that turned out not to be true. Certainly it's different bands, different.
You brought it down to one day.
Yeah. And it was more that it was a different music scene than it was in the 90s. And it's a different music scene now than it was 10 years ago. And that's the nature of community and as they evolve and the music scene evolves so we weren't worried too much about that. So that was the start of Homegrown, and you know, I remember a little story is Roger and I bussed out in front of the Toucan. We had made up some little cards, and we wanted to raise enough money to launch a website, you know, which was about $40 or something like that. So we made our $40, launched the website, and that was back in 2009, and it's been going ever since. And yeah, I think this year we have 143 different acts, probably 350 volunteer musicians in 18 venues.
That's kind of nuts.
It is, all in one day. And if you haven't participated in it, either come down and, well, it's too late to apply to play, but come down, enjoy it, and it's pretty crazy.
Foley Mountain Playboys, 10 o'clock at the Buckle.
Yes, and don't miss the Tomcats at the RCHA at 11 p.m.
But I wonder if, like every town could do such a thing. Like, I think it speaks to the Kingston scene. Yeah. It's like, it's all kind of levels of the Kingston scene. Like, there's some bigger bands that wouldn't participate, but, you know, you're from the amateur to the professional, the widening or semi-pro or whatever, you know, that widening range. It's pretty impressive,
I think
you know.
There's some hockey analogies. I often say, well, it's kind of a junior C, junior B, but kind of leagues with a few NHLers stop by, you know, kind of thing. And but the other hockey analogy is that if you're going to have a raise, you know, good hockey teams, you've got to have a whole ecosystem of development. Right. And I think that's one thing we have in Kingston, that there's a real kind of a music appreciation and we can talk about maybe not enough audience. You and I have had that conversation. But as far as, you know, somebody wants to start a band or try to record some music or learn some music or participate in an open mic, there's just all this support. Or we have studios around town, we have producers around town, we, you know, we could use a few more venues, but there's a real ecosystem of music support for artists and hobbyists, and that's what you need to create some stars now and then.
Mm-hmm. And I think one cool thing for those that don't know too, it's like Joe's Mill Music Mill is a free music lending library. So, you know, that's like, not only is Homegrown doing this great service of like connecting all of these musicians, and it's got all of these ripple effects of like, venues are super full, so they're happy, and musicians have a place to play, which is great. And there's opportunity for kids of all ages to do this. You know, there's a youth stage, things like that. But then it's also feeding into that program that's not just that one day, it's feeding into something that's larger too. So it's that, you know, that ecosystem of music that they're each part is like really supporting the whole scene.
Yeah, and contributing to the community. Like, Joe's Mill is just amazing. And it's popped up in other areas too. I think Vancouver has something similar now, the Vancouver Library. So it sets a good example, you know.
Yeah, and they've expanded to, they also have music instrument programs in the schools. I'm not up on it all. I think you should maybe get Joe's Mill people in here to talk fully about what they're doing or get on their website. But they've really expanded it to include music education and development of music programs in the school. And as you know, we've had some politicians erroneously think that, well, we need to cut back. We'll cut back on music programs. What good are they? I'm thinking of Mike Harris, actually. He was, I don't know where the state of music programs are right now in the schools, but it's short-sighted if we don't support that.
Totally. And that's where, you know, it begins. You know, the education part is the easiest thing to kind of cut, because it's the long term. It's the long term goal, and yeah.
We're around the same age. I think. But just like my entire life, it's been sort of neoliberalism, like cutting away at any arts funding. It's just like, you know, from the early 80s, you know, like till now, and it just keeps on going. It just keeps on going. So it's left to private enterprise or the communities to step up. And so, Moira, what do you think we could do? Is the city thinking of any programs to bolster the Kingston music community or give opportunities? Well, obviously the Spring Reverb is part of that, but to give more opportunities, places to play. I was thinking with the closure of the Mansion recently, it got me thinking. It was like, this is, would be an opportunity for the city to go in there and create an art center, but or something like that. But you know, they're always talking about funding and what have you. But
yeah,
is there any sort of talk like that?
Well, I mean, where to begin? There's a lot to sort of dissect there, and I think you're on to stuff. Are conversations always happening? Yes. Is there money always to support it? No. And part of my job really is to advocate for the fact that music is a viable business, and it deserves some recognition. And unfortunately, I haven't really been in the position. I have been like, you know, a DIY punk promoter for the 25 years prior to this, where it was, you know, it was a little bit of me going to, you know, maybe going to municipal funds, going to public funding to sort of try to write grants to get programs and things like that. But how can we... But now, being on this side of things, I recognize the value of like talking to the people, and this is, you know, federal, provincial, municipal level, on the value of music. And we haven't always done a great job of showcasing that. You know, we feel that. And I'm not saying that we as artists don't. I think artists are doing a really great job. They just should be doing the artist part.
They but just the, don't have the support.
But the advocates aren't always, you know, championed to say like, oh, no, it's like actually really good for business. Like it's actually like really good. We make just as much money as like fisheries. But like a fishing station closes, that's a big like national news. A venue closes, we're just like, oh, that's sad. Cool. We'll just figure it out over there. And, you know, there's no real ecosystem we're working on it now, but we're late to the game, even compared to like the film industry, where it's like they were like talking about, you know, economic impact like 10 years ago. And we're just starting to get to that point where it's like, oh, yeah, okay, we, you know, the Canadian Live Music Association. 2 years, what year was it? 2 years ago, I guess, published their Here and Now Economic Impact Report showing the value of live music. So that's just live music in Canada. That just happened like a year ago.
Yeah.
And that was the first of its kind. So it's like now politicians are taking note, but it's like think of the years that we've spent. We have to sort of continue those conversations. Yeah.
And well, beyond economic impact, general social mental impact, well-being, social well-being, and Tom, like, well, you're talking about homegrown. That one night is an example of what the possibility of, because there's talk. You know, a few years ago about Music City Kingston and like a comparison to or like creating that, which music's everywhere. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, well, homegrown is kind of unique. And I don't think...
you couldn't do it every night.
You couldn't do it all the time. I'm not even sure you could do it in another city. I think it was Jeff Chown who brought that up, and it's probably a very unique Kingston phenomena, right? And it's back to the community. The community supports music. They support things like the mill. Again, that would be hard to deliver to other cities. They support each other. So that is very unique. We have a music community that homegrown is an outgrowth of that. But we're not Austin. We don't have the venues. I don't think we have the audience. You and I have talked a little bit about that. There's sometimes more music being produced than there is audience to consume it.
Well, we're losing venues.
We're losing venues. And people have, we're competing with Netflix and video games, and people just aren't getting out, right? And it can be expensive to go out. We see programming. One of the things that I've always pushed back on, it doesn't go very far. We do a lot of evening programming for music, and I guess that's appealing to the student market or a youth market. But I think there's room for, early evening shows before dinner. So you go to a show, or the show is part of dinner, and I think there's a real opportunity there. And we're seeing a little bit of that. I think.
Well, the Broom is 7:30 all the time.
Yep.
And matinees. I mean, and they've been wildly, successful. Like punk rock matinees have been wildly successful.
And I think the Toucans, known as a premium late night bar, just last Sunday they had Rocket Surgery there and an afternoon show.
Yeah.
And I was asking about it. I thought it was in there. No, they're looking at some additional programming, right? Yeah. And it was packed.
Well, in the Tuesday Jam is a perfect
Tuesday's another
example
one.
Of like for, you got like 89-year-old ladies on the dance floor.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I can get home for Jeopardy. but they have the energy.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's another kind of phenomenon. Like I have not seen, and I've been hosting jams for over two decades as part of my music career. Tuesday is just wild. And what do you think about Tuesday?
Oh.
What does that mean to you? You're there.
Well, it means a lot to me. You inviting me to participate's really helped my own music development because boy, you've got basically a show every week, and you I take advantage of that and try to keep my chops up and learn some new songs, and you got an audience that encourages you, it's a family atmosphere. We were talking about Newfoundland earlier, and it's kind of got that sense to it. We're singing happy birthdays every week. The joy on people's faces, the occasional sadness when we lose people and celebrate their lives there, and the lovers on the dance floor, and the people getting, out and about, new friendships.
There's been a number of cases of people that have just moved to town, and they will come and meet a whole group of friends, and that's their thing.
Yeah, and the friends I've made there now, it's really increased my community connections. And there was a lady last night from Halifax, and she was a friend of visiting some friends here. And she came up afterwards and just was really moved by the whole experience of just coming out there and sharing. So she came out of her way to thank us for putting that on.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
I don't think that's restricted to Kingston. I think you could take that and move it to different towns or whatever. I just like the early show, the jam aspect or whatever. Like the format we use is like we have the jam with the guys, and then the middle section will be the open mic for people, amateurs, singers or whatever that want to get up. And then we have pizza time.
Yeah, we were just talking about Tunes Day and how it creates community. And I was reminded of the Bloomfield coffee shop that I was involved in. And it was a very similar format in that we had a feature and we had an open mic. But it was really a community coming together. And I do have to tell one story, though, about that. Was we had an announcement from the town that they were going to charge us $50 for the use of the room. And so I announced at the show that we were putting on, I says, well, we're going to be looking, we can't afford $50. So we're going to be looking for another location to put the show on. And so if you've got any ideas, let us know. Well, the next week I got called down to the council meeting, and the first thing that I got was an apology from the councillor who made the suggestion that they charge $50 for the coffee shop and that we'd be happy to have you there and don't worry about the $50. And it was just, again, it was an example of the community saying, no.
Yeah, we want this.
We want this, and, you know.
Yeah.
And I wasn't being Machiavellian. I was really serious. We just didn't have the budget, right?
Yeah.
You know, we were, anyway. But it's another example of how important it can be, and you get community behind you. I imagine if you said, oh, we can't have the Tunes Day anymore. I mean,
there'd be trouble.
There'd be trouble. Okay.
All right. So any final thoughts? Music equals community. Any, or promote anything that's coming up, if you have, Moira?
Well, I want to like go back to a couple of things that were passed along and just plant some seeds, I think, for people that, you know, are things that I think about a lot and ways that I, like, you know, I only can control this thing that I'm doing right now. So, how can I make sure that my actions are supporting these greater things, supporting the community, supporting the things that we're talking about and, you know, showcasing music and advocating for music. And I think it's important to note, like, these Tunes Day jams and these coffee shop places, you know, there's access for people. People have an entry point, which is wonderful and needs to be celebrated. And it's, you know, it's shaking up the status quo of, like, how music has been so, you know, so dependent and coupled with alcohol, which is a slippery slope for many people. And I know something that, you know, putting concerts in the late evenings does drive up bar prices, sales and things like that. But it doesn't always have to be like that. You know, music is so important to us in so many areas. So make sure when the community is doing these jams that are in at different times or matinee shows or dry venues or things like that, how can we make sure that we're supporting them when they are doing that work? And recognizing that it's like, you know, there is probably a community that also appreciates a matinee show and also appreciates an open jam.
Yeah.
And also looking at the spaces and the venues as these really important cultural offices. You know, these are the spaces where our musicians work. How can we support them? Yes, you know, we are sort of sometimes locked up with, like, alcohol sales, but is there other ways that we can make sure that we're not saying goodbye to venues or spaces when they exist?
Could probably have a whole other episode on the funding of...
Of course.
Well, a whole living wage for musicians, you know. Because, well, we all know alcohol sales are going down with habits changing. So a lot of places I play, they work out different deals for, because when they used to depend on alcohol sales, it just, their crowd's not doing that. So yes, they have the space, but either it's a rental situation or they sell the band or books of drink tickets because they just need to create revenue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting, Tom.
Yeah. I agree with many things you said there about, you know, certainly supporting venues when a venue does step up and put music on. Maybe they don't fill the bar that night, but get out and support them. Just get out and, you know, if you like live music, use it or lose it. So if you like it occasionally, well, maybe do it a little more than occasionally. Like, get out there and just support your artist. Check out a venue. Plan a dinner. If you're going to go out for dinner, you're going to have a celebration, include some live music in there. There's lots of options around there. And then it's back to us as creators of live music to create those opportunities for people. And I think there's still room. If we're a creative community, I think we really need to challenge ourselves on how can we be creative in this space. And I can't give you an example right now, but I don't want to give up on the idea of is there other ways that we can connect audiences with music? Is there other ways we can build audiences? You know, so and can we continue to put energy into that development of artists? And I just think we shouldn't just sort of let it happen. I think we should.
I think you need to invest in it. It's like infrastructure.
Yeah.
It's like roads, you know.
and the education component. I mean, that's your building your audience right there. It's a long game approach. But, you know, if a kid doesn't have the access to see music until they're 19, that's an insane amount of time. And that's the time that they probably had the most actual free time in their life. And if their, you know, first open mic is when they're 19, that's a problem. So we need to make sure that our community, there's lots of opportunity in Kingston. We're actually really, I think, for the size we do, like you said, punch above our weight in a lot of areas. But how can we make sure that those opportunities are still continuing and supported?
I love when, the opportunities for what, like Dead Root Revival, when we play some private shows and there's an 8 or 9 year old kids there. Well, we played this show up north of Wakefield, and just these little kids are just asked Bones if they could get on a drum kit, and they're just like so excited about it. It's like their first rock show. But when you have all these different times that you can go out and see music, there's more opportunity and there's more access, like you're saying. So yeah, more of that. And I think that's about it. We're going to wrap it up. Thanks, Moira. Thanks, Tom Stewart.
Thanks for having us.
And that's Leave It All on the Stage. Subscribe on Substack. This podcast will be on the radio too. So thanks, everybody. Thanks again to our special guests and our listeners for joining me on Leave It All on the Stage today. Be sure to stay tuned to CFRC 101.9 FM for our next show and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite streaming platforms, YouTube, or on my website, tomsavage.ca, where you can also sign up for the Leave It All on the Stage newsletter and get the latest news on my music projects, access exclusive music, and read more about my thoughts on the life of a professional musician. Want to join me in a conversation? Reach out through the website. In the meantime, support your local artists and have a great day. Problems that we had never seemed so bad next to what we made.
I principle of the thing. Feelings get hurt, thoughts seem to scatter. It's the bitterness that heartache brings. The world grows cold, nothing else seems to matter. It's a long, hard road ahead. And the further you go, the less you seem to know. But I remember what my mama said. Vague recollection in the frozen food section, a behemoth of a big box store, where you can buy your tires and tofu in one stop, and I wonder why, what for. The world seems to be spinning out of control. So why'd you leave me in this place, where I don't speak the language, can't order a sandwich, nowhere to hide my face. Mirrors are all two-way, not sure what to say except to feel like going home. That's 2 years, 3,000 miles in a suitcase away. Single time that I wound up on the losing end, then you know I wouldn't be sitting here right now. 'Cause it's a principle of the thing. Feelings get hurt, thoughts seem to scatter. It's the bitterness that heartache brings. The world grows cold, nothing else seems to matter. It's a long, hard road ahead. And the further you go, the less you seem to know. Yeah, the further you go, the less you seem to know. Conversation is to discuss the inevitable land. Well, I could blame it on lack of sleep, but I think it's 'cause I'm not a sheep. Or if I am, I will grow in sharp and spiky like porcupine quills. I'll admit I'm wrong, I won't run and hide, and I won't kindly just step aside. I'll muster up the courage to face another day. Call me unruly, call me bold, call me stubborn, or just plain old. But before I go, there's something I gotta say. Well, I think I've done all right. 30,000 days, 30,000 nights, I've had my share of troubled times and my share of remorse. But then again, it's just par for the course. Now my body's letting go of me, but my spirit will keep me free. And I got 1,000 stories, I'll repeat them till you know. I'm not saying I was a leader of men, but I had my moments every now and then. I was never one to brag or put on an elaborate show. But I think I've done all right. 30,000 days, 30,000 nights, I've had my share of troubled times and my share of remorse. But then again, that's just par for the course. When I beckon, Lord, won't you hear my call? When I turn in like a tore down old shopping mall, when I face the final curtain, whatever Mr. Anchor said, I want to be remembered for who I was, not that time I was voted employee of the month. I stood tall, I stood proud, my children were loved and well fed. Cause I think I've done all right. 30,000 days, 30,000 nights, I've had my share of troubled times and my share of remorse. But then again, this is par for the course. Fire, no brimstone. here. I'm searching for